When you need to refuel between meetings or running errands, or you just want a healthy snack that squashes your hunger, Wonderful Pistachios, which come in a variety of flavors and sizes, by the way, are the perfect choice to fill you up and keep you going throughout the day. Wonderful Pistachios is also a good source of protein and a zero-guilt snack. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, guys, which gives you over 10% of your daily value. And with flavors like salt and pepper, sweet chili, and seasoned salt in the shelled variety, options like chili roasted, sea salt, and vinegar or jalapeno lime in the no-shell variety, you're sure to please your taste buds while snacking healthy. So check out wonderfulpistachios.com to learn more about how these little green wonders can power up your day.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Something to say.
Uh-oh.
I'm
already starting my email.
I can always tell when it's my turn to talk, it's all you hear is look at Autumn's texting, Jake is texting, and you're sending an email. It's just not right.
Oh, okay.
Well, but to be fair, I text while Jill's talking too.
You do? All right. What the heck's the matter? All right, go ahead, Manis.
The local funeral home in my little town.
Oh, this is a winner.
No, the local.
Awesome.
In my little town, they had us put on a supper, a free supper for people.
To attract customers?
Yes.
Wow.
No, well, it was very informative, but
They
sent it, and it was for estate.
I'd be so offended if you invited me to a dinner preparing for my death.
You know what? At some point, you got to look at it. It was an estate planning seminar.
Okay.
And my brother got the email, the note in the mail, and I said, let's go. Let's go. Let's go to this thing.
Why?
It was at the golf course. It was a lovely spread they put on, and then they talked. So my brother, my sister-in-law, and myself, four of us went. And
I'm still typing, but I'm going to take this opportunity to eat. But for our audience, I will try to chew away from the microphone.
But you have some people do not want to look at. But you know what? It's very important.
You know we've done a segment on this before, right?
No, not this good though. This one's really good.
I'm ready.
Why? We've done a segment on this. On wills and estates?
Yeah, you did a whole thing about dying and being prepared and all of it.
Well,
I think that was more the personal side of being ready for that kind of thing.
No. It was the whole getting your affairs in order thing, yeah.
Yeah, because my mom has the death folder that she keeps saying every time she comes out. She's like, my folder's almost ready to bring you.
See?
Yeah, everything's in line.
The death. But you know what struck me is... how people don't want to talk about it. They don't want to talk about it. And it really hit home, if you don't have a will. And okay, if we have done this before, then I'm repeating myself, but I think it's worth repeating myself.
Yeah, let's do it. I want to repeat it.
Like, there was a...
For everybody out there, just push the fast forward button. Go on. We unfortunately can't do that here, but you have the luxury of pushing the double arrow button
to the
right.
I don't know... Every state probably has laws, and every country has their laws. But anyway, in the province of British Columbia, if you don't have a will, what do? You die, and it doesn't just automatically go right away to the government. What happens is they search for the closest living relative. Now, Betty Jo next door could have taken good care of you, could have fed your dog, could have helped you to the doctor, could have done all these things, been kind to you, and none of your family came. You die, Betty Jo doesn't matter. This person who loved and took care of you all this time gets nothing. They're going to find the third cousin removed. They're going to go through the search, and that third cousin removed who never gave a crap about you will get your stuff and your money because you didn't write a will.
Okay.
Right?
Yep.
Well, then, yeah. So
write a will?
I'm just saying, write a will. And if you...
Do you have a will?
Yes, I do. And well, I made
what
it
do
into
they get? The rose bushes? The drain tiles and the jug?
No, I have...
Can we make sure I'm not in this will?
I put a rider in. I put a rider in for my dog.
What is it? Okay, and what happened?
What a codicil.
A what? A
codicil, when you add to your will.
Got it.
That if something happens that goes to the woman that's taking care of her, and $5,000.
Does that woman know this?
I think I've told her.
Because this broad is never even available when you come out here to watch the dog. In at 10, you leave at 4 because there's no one to watch the dog.
No, this is the long term. When we go on tour, this is the long term.
Oh.
This is my friend that takes care of her.
Okay.
Out in the country.
Got it.
The gal that I have come in is the older gal.
Okay.
That likes, she likes gambling money. So so she likes it because I give her money in U.S. Because she likes to cross the border and gamble. So she takes care of me and sits with Millie.
What?
So then, there was a question period. And it's just amazing how
I don't have a trash bag anymore. You know why? Because the trash bag has become my bag because Janice stole my bag today.
No, I didn't. I just came in and I said, wow, that is a really cool bag. And then
as in, please give it to me.
No,
with the puppy dog eyes. Now I don't have a bag.
I said, that's a really cool bag. And you said, do you want it? And I was
No, you took it. You guilted me. I felt bad. And you took it. Okay, go on.
This one lady said, what happens to my body? And she goes, I'm just saying, she thought that her body got, when someone dies at home, she didn't know how your body gets to the funeral home.
Okay.
She thought that you were put in a bag.
I think
she had a couple of drinks. But anyway.
Okay.
Because there was drinking there.
So what you want people to do at home is go to an estate planning seminar?
Well, I think if people offer these seminars and they put on a fine spread, you should go. You should go because there's information and the duties of executors, the power of attorneys, all that stuff. Like if you're going to give someone the power of attorney, you make sure they don't take off with the dough. I'm a power of attorney for my dad.
Well, now we know where the $5,000 for the dog's coming from.
I have some savings.
I doubt it. Not on what we paid.
No, from before.
There was a before me?
There was a before you.
All right.
Anyway, I just, about understanding probate, when things go into probate, and you know, like that, you just have to be careful that, you know, if you're going to put someone in charge, that they make sure you take care of you. Like, you're not just... You know, like when you start kind of going, you know, sticking bologna on your forehead and losing it.
Okay.
You know, that person's going to make sure you're cared for and they don't, you know, heading off to Disneyland.
My mom doesn't trust me with this. She's already got her home picked out and everything. She's like, well, I don't want you to have to take care of me. I'm like, you don't want me to take care of you? No, I don't want you to have to take care of me. You don't want me to take care of you. No, that's not what I said. I said I don't want you to have to take care of me.
So she took care of things.
Yeah, everyone, I mean, yes. We've done this before.
Well.
And you did it pretty good the first time. I thought.
Well, I guess because we just went to the seminar and there's all this.
But it is, it is important. And look. It is obviously very important, and you know, as we all experienced in this room, I had a health scare recently, and all I could think about were the kids and making sure that everything was taken care of. But I have taken care of it simply because I know to take care of it and make sure that I have a living trust, and all these lawyers took care of it. But
Many people don't. I would say the majority of people.
So how would they figure out how to find one of these things? Do you have any sort of usable takeaway here?
Well, I mean...
How would they find one of these seminars?
Well, I guess you would look. You would phone your local funeral home, see if they put it on. I mean, I know the funeral home was drumming up business too. You know, here's a nice dinner. Give your body to us.
What about one of those legal sites too?
You know what? Any lawyer or notary public can do your will for you.
Yeah.
Right.
There you go.
You know, they can do your will for you. Yeah. You just got to, you know, and seriously, sometimes it doesn't have to be all that formal. It can be as long as it's witnessed and it's legible and you were of sound mind when you did it. But anyway, I guess what shocked me, I was surprised at the naivete of some of the questions.
Interesting.
I was just like, wow, really? Like, it's just because we don't want to look at it. I think we want to just, it's one of those things you want to put blinders up.
Hmm. Okay.
Yeah. All right, everybody, back to your texting.
Well, since Janice has made this whole podcast about death,
I just want to remind to make a will. That's
okay.
All.
Well, anyway, let me see if I can pick this sucker up a bit.
Okay.
I actually read a book, Glimpsing Heaven, and it's by Judy Bachrach. I think I'm pronouncing that right. And I came across it randomly and had decided to kind of read it. And it's about, she doesn't call them near-death experiences because they are actually death experiences. The individual that physically dies and comes back to life.
Yep.
And she talks about more and more how with advancements of modern medicine, it's like the, quote, time of Lazarus. Like, they're literally able to bring people back to life from the dead. So she's a journalist. She was afraid of dying, like I think we all are. And her mother had Alzheimer's, which you might find fairly interesting, Janice. And she interviews, people who've had the experiences, doctors who've had patients who've had them, also people who take care of people who are dying.
Yep. Palliative.
But what I found so fascinating about this is that despite the fact that there are obvious differences, there are a tremendous amount of similarities. So, and there's a thing called the Grayson Scale, created by a guy named Bruce Grayson. And he was a professor and a psychiatrist. And he developed the scale to measure, I'm reading off of this website, he developed this scale to measure the depth of an individual's near-death experience. So here's a copy of the scale. So the thing is, so many people had almost all of these different things on the scale. So number one, did time seem to speed up or slow down? Number two, were your thoughts speeded up? Number three, did scenes from your past come back to you? Number four, and he has different answers. It could be no, I remembered many past events, my past flashed before me out of my control. So like there's different answers that you can choose from. Did you suddenly seem to understand everything?
Interesting.
Yeah. I've read a bunch of different books about this too, which is kind of interesting. Did you have a feeling of peace or pleasantness? Did you have a feeling of joy? Did you feel a sense of harmony or unity with the universe? Did you see or feel surrounded by a brilliant light? Were your senses more vivid than usual? Did you seem to be aware of things going on elsewhere? So, for example, one guy got struck by lightning.
Mm-hmm.
He picked up the telephone and lightning struck the building and it came through the phone. It killed him. And he wanted to see his kids one last time. Well, when he was resuscitated, he asked his wife, were the kids getting their faces painted at this time? And they were. And there's a ton of those different kinds of scenarios, like people who are in an operating room and they know the music that was playing when they were operating on them. And they saw their bodies from up above and things like that.
Many times.
So there's many different instances of that. Okay, did scenes from the future come to you? Did you feel separated from your body, as in, you know, were you floating up above your body? Did you witness your body from down below? Did you seem to enter some other unearthly world? Did you encounter a mystical being or presence or hear an unidentifiable voice? Now, the interesting thing is, like, I find this fascinating. One kid who, they made a movie about this kid with Greg Kinnear. And, oh, gosh, I can't remember.
I know the one, recently,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, but it was a book, too. And the kid saw Jesus, but his dad was a preacher. Well, Carl Jung, who's one of the fathers of modern psychotherapy, he died and came back, and he saw, I believe, I'm trying to remember, but it was like a priest outside of a temple. Another woman saw a monk. Another woman saw a bunch of talking triangles. So it seems as though this mystical being or presence, from what I can tell from these stories, manifests in a form that you feel safe, yes, or comfortable with.
Yep.
So although it's different, you might go, well, no, she didn't see Jesus, but it's still the same kind of entity. Another one, did you come to a border or a point of no return? And in a lot of these stories, like, they weren't allowed to kind of go beyond. So, like, Carl Jung wanted to go into the temple, and they wouldn't let him go into the temple.
Okay.
Or they won't let you pass into the light. They're like, when you go in the light, you can't come back, and you have to come back. And so, anyway, there's these scorings, and I'm a bit of a skeptic, I'll be honest. I am. My nature is to be a bit of a skeptic. I like evidence. I believe in evidence, which is why I try to understand the science of the universe so much, because when I look for God, I don't find God in a place of worship like a church or a synagogue. For me, I look around and in nature I see God. And when I listen to these amazing cosmologists speak about the vastness of the universe and the way the universe works and how incredibly meticulous it is, to me, I'm like, well, for goodness sake, there's got to be the chances of this place existing the way that it does and allowing for life is one in a gazillion, quite literally. So to me, that's where I go, okay, that's interesting. I believe there's got to be something more. With these death experiences, as this woman mm-hmm. says, there are so many similarities from so many different individuals from all over the world, all different religions, all different ages, different ethnicities, different gender, of course. There are so many similarities that I just was like, there's just got to be something to this. And one of the interesting things they talked about is that they don't speak with their mouth. They comprehend. They just comprehend. So you may ask a question and you comprehend it. And I will say that I had one of the only interesting things in this realm that's ever happened to me. I was very close with my grandmother. I'm not sure if we talked about this on the show.
When you saw her?
In a dream.
Yes.
Yeah. And to recap, if you didn't hear it, I was very, very close with my grandmother. She died when I was 10. We had this agreement, you know, okay, if you can come back, nothing, absolutely nothing. And I just was like, well, you know, this is it. There's no coming back. And when I was 27, I didn't even dream about her. And I even commented about the fact that she was never even in my dreams. At 27, I had this extremely vivid dream, and she was in my mom's home, and I saw her, and I knew it was her, and I became hysterical. And when she spoke to me, she didn't speak. I could hear her thoughts. And she had actually taught me, which is exactly what they say happens, and she had actually taught me more. I remember I know that we had had a long conversation, but I came back with only one piece of knowledge. And I called my mom. It was 4 a.m. I called my mom hysterical crying. I was like, I saw grandma. And she left me with this. This is what I could remember. It's basically, she was like, you know, she was trying to give me peace. And she was like, we see each other every day. Like, I'm always with you. Don't ever think that I'm not with you. I'm always with you. And I was 27. I was going through a really hard time. I knew I was never going to see her again. And in 13 years, I've never had another dream about her. But what I found so fascinating is that these guys talk, or the individuals that die often talk about, oh, I, you know, it was all explained to me, but it made all this sense, but they come back and they don't remember exactly what it was, which is interesting because I remember we had had a whole talk, but when I came back, I could only remember this one sort of like, hey, here you go. This is what I'm going to leave you with. And she didn't speak to me with her mouth. I could hear her thoughts in the dream anyway. So just for me personally, I bring this up because, you know, no matter what your religion, it brought me a lot of peace. It brought me a tremendous amount of peace. I think we all fear death. How could you not? You know,
see, I don't.
Oh, see, I do.
See, I do. I don't. And that's my epiphany that I've had recently, because I saw
that Greg, I think it was that Heaven is for Real.
Yeah, that's it. Heaven is for Real.
Wasn't
a great movie, mind you. So read the book. The book is better.
I watched on PBS, it was Richard Gere narrated it. It was called The Buddha.
Oh.
And it was all about the, and you know how sometimes just there's one sentence that's said and you go, and you just have that overwhelming, just go, oh my God.
Epiphany,
You have this thing. And
yeah.
And this one scientist or theologian said, we're really, how Buddha looks at our life is that this is just high school. This is just junior high.
Right.
Till we get, because they are firm believers in reincarnation, you know what I mean? The next life, the next life. And I just thought, and I just had this feeling like, you know what, Janice, if you don't get it right this time,
oh, God.
It's okay.
Ram Dass, who was a big spiritual leader, had this great analogy, and he said, imagine the world's biggest mountain, and he goes, take a bird and put a scarf in the bird's mouth, and as many times as the bird has to fly back and forth over the mountain with the scarf in order to wear it away is as many times as you'll be born and die.
Yeah, I mean, I don't,
you know, whether you believe in reincarnation or not, maybe you see unity among people and as many times as life is born and dies on the planet.
No, but I'm now more so than ever believing in reincarnation.
Oh, interesting.
More so. And I do believe there's old souls. You know, when you run into somebody and they've just got this, you just know they're an old soul.
Interesting. Okay.
I believe that. So it just gave me this incredible amount of peace that what I don't get done now, maybe the next time I'll get it done.
Absolutely.
And as I say, and I don't know how I'll come back. I don't know if it's gonna, as an animal, as another human being.
I look at it, I'm like, you know how many other forms of life there are in the universe, for goodness
this
sake.
This is true.
It's like, come on now. You know, and that's just this universe. Like, they've done incredible. Like, have you seen? Oh, shoot. Now I got to find it again. You keep talking. I'll look for this.
Well,
I'll just ignore you, but the audience won't. It's called the Drake Equation. So listen to this. This is fascinating. So all these brilliant cosmologists came up with something called the Drake Equation. And it essentially looks at all these different factors that try to guesstimate at how many other forms of life currently exist in only our galaxy. Ready? So how cool is this? Here are the different parts of the equation. The average rate of star formation in our galaxy. The fraction of those stars that have planets. The average number of planets that can potentially support life per star that has planets. Because, for example, in our solar system, what do we have, 9 planets?
You're getting kind of heady on me.
Yep,
I just wanted to come back.
They gave us Pluto back, P.S.
Oh, they did? So how many do we have now? 9?
9.
Right.
I just want to come back as maybe a cow. But anyway,
no,
go ahead.
You might come back as like an alien. So,
I see where you're going
listen.
With this. Well, I got confused.
This is significant.
All
you
right.
might come back as an alien. Because if you think about it, just think about all the other forms of life that exist in the universe. So again, if you look at just our solar system off of our one little sun, and there are billions and billions of stars in just our galaxy, Earth is what's called the Goldilocks zone, meaning not too hot, not too cold to be able to support life. The Goldilocks zone.
Okay.
Okay. So how many planets in this solar system can support life? The fraction of planets that could support life that actually develop at some point, because they have different theories about how life actually begins on these planets that are in the Goldilocks zone. The fraction of planets with life that actually go on to develop intelligent civilizations. So we're an intelligent civilization, right? Not just little amoebas running around. The fraction of civilizations that develop a technology that releases detectable signs of their existence into space, the fraction of civilizations that can survive their own technology. And that's the one where most civilizations that are intelligent can't survive their own technology.
But, well, that's... I didn't know I was going to come back as an alien, but that's all right.
It's possible.
Well,
look at that. I mean, there's got to get life from somewhere. We're all in the same God's universe here.
Okay.
I mean, if you believe in God, God would have created the universe, I would imagine.
I do believe in God.
So then everything in the universe would belong to God. So he might send you back as like a 10-armed squid on the planet Zircon or something. Imagine what you could learn.
Well, maybe I'll get laid.
No, even then, still no.
But you got 10 arms to help yourself.
Yeah, that's right. Nothing positive. <confident. laughs>
<laughs>
There are so many people that come up to me and talk to me about how they've lost weight and how fitness is something that has transformed their lives. And you know what? I was in the same place. I was an overweight kid, and fitness helped me change my life, not just my body. If this is something that you're thinking about, become a personal trainer with the National Academy of Sports Medicine. And guess what? You get paid to stay in shape and help others reach their fitness goals. Plus, these guys are going to guarantee that you'll land a job within 60 days of your certification, or they're going to give you your money back. All you got to do is visit myusatrainer.com today and get started with your free 14-day sneak peek of our fast, fun online program at myusatrainer.com. That's myusatrainer.com. Okay. Are we ready?
Yes.
Yes, Jillian. We are here for the Snappy Series Part 2.
Okay. Again, I don't know how snappy it is, but if you missed our other segments in our series, here's what it's about. It's about the way that our food, the way we consume food, the foods that we eat, the way our food is grown, the way we produce it, the way we go after it, how it's destroying our planet. And I appreciate it's a little scary, it's a little intimidating, it's a little overwhelming, but we're solution-based here, and the whole point is to give people the information, but then tell them how to use the information so that we can make a difference.
Right.
So today's segment on the subject matter is about our oceans, and we are destroying them, and this is a big deal. So here's why it's a big deal. Food. Here's the thing. When we look at this, while we think, whatever, I don't care about the sharks, or you don't care about the seals, or you don't care about whatever, maybe you don't, okay, fine, but the problem is, the food thing, that's going to be a big problem. We're running out of food. So hopefully you do care about nature and the ocean and what have you. But if you don't and you've got other problems that you think are more important, the food thing, that's an issue.
It's an issue.
So this one's actually very twofold because, well, most of them are. They're all twofold. They pertain, it's a closed system, but what destroys the environment destroys our health. So here's the deal. Here's the issue with the oceans. The first one is we've got, well, this isn't not in order of priority, mind you, just in order of how I'm going to list them, our dead zones. Ted Danson wrote an incredible book about this. I believe it's called just Oceans. So dead zones, these are areas of the ocean where there is no life but freaking jellyfish. And you can see these freaking dead zones from space. Man, they're serious. They go on for thousands and thousands of miles in all over the world at the mouth of where rivers hit the ocean. And what's happening is that these extreme chemical fertilizers that are being sprayed on crops, predominantly genetically engineered crops. And the reason that people are needing these hardcore chemical fertilizers, like Miracle-Gro, for example, is because the soil's dead. And the soil's dead because they're planting only genetically engineered crops, and of course they're using all these pesticides. So in order to make the plants grow, they're spraying all these chemical fertilizers on them. Well, the fertilizers are then running off into the ocean, being consumed by plankton and other little amoeba, whatever. And it's creating something called either hypoxia or apoxia. Forgive me, I'm not a marine biologist. This is just me reading, seeing different TED Talks on the matter, and also the Monterey Bay Aquarium website. Yep. and what have you. So it's suffocating, because these things are growing out of control, they're suffocating all the marine life for thousands of miles, hence the term dead zone, and that you've got these, the only thing that can survive it is jellyfish. And then you've got this crazy boom of jellyfish, and it's a huge problem. So that's problem number one. Obviously, the way that we're fishing is destroying the ocean. So it's everything from gill netting, which is killing dolphins, seals, sharks, whales are getting caught up in this, to long lining, pole trolling. I mean, it goes on and on and on. Dredging, where they will literally, this destroyed me. I was watching a TED Talk, and I keep getting this place where I'm like, all right, okay. I got to be more ethical with my food. And I feel like I get how hard it is for people to do that. But I have enough financial resource that I can be more ethical with my food. And I am like, I'm just going to eat seafood. Oh, God. And then seafood and grass-fed beef, right? So now I'm watching this guy who's a photojournalist. for Nat Geo, an underwater photojournalist, and he gives a TED Talk, and I cannot, forgive me, cannot remember his name. And he does this whole thing on the oceans, and he goes, so for, and I think shrimp, you know, come on, a shrimp, right? That mm-hmm. should be fine. They dredge for miles and miles the ocean floor, and he's got pictures, right? They bring up this huge dredge. There are 8 shrimp and hundreds of dead animals. Sand sharks, seahorse, just devastated coral. Like, they're destroying in marine environments, right? Coral reefs, everything are all being destroyed by these fishing practices. And all for 8 shrimp, 1 shrimp dinner. And he's got this image where he's in the ocean and they're dumping out these dead creatures. And it's just all of these carcasses just floating to the bottom. And I was like, oh, my God.
Serve no purpose to them.
I can't handle it. I was like, I can't eat anything. We're going to starve. And it was so overwhelming. And so the list goes on and on and on. But basically, you know, we're killing the whales. We're killing the shark. It's a big, 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 gigantic problem. The health of our oceans is an extremely big deal. So guess what? Yay. There are things we can do. So the first one, when it comes to your produce, try not to purchase things that have been sprayed. Do not use Miracle-Gro in your home, on your plants. Don't use these hardcore chemical fertilizers. Use natural compost. The next one is when you purchase from a local farmer's market and ask them if they use these chemical fertilizers on their produce. Another one is, this one's super simple. I like this a lot. You simply go to the Monterey Bay Aquarium website and they've got an app for your area. And they'll tell you, because then you're like, well, wait a minute, I'm not supposed to eat farmed salmon because the fish are get antibiotics and they're fed genetically engineered corn and they've got all kinds of artificial color. I'm not supposed to eat this. This is bad for me. Oh, but wait, I am supposed to eat farmed fish. And it's really confusing. There's an app. It makes it so simple. You download it. It's on the Monterey Bay Aquarium site. And it'll be specific to your area. And it's going to tell you what's healthy for you and what's safe for the environment so you can make better food choices. And in addition, when you go to a restaurant or you go to, let's say, your fish market mm-hmm. at the supermarket, ask them, do you have, you know, environmentally safe, do you serve sustainable seafood? And the reason you're asking is because you're showing them there's a demand for it. And that's really important. So we place, as a consumer, we play a really important role, obviously, in helping to save the ocean. So letting people know that this matters, that we care, that we're paying attention, you ask these questions. And so here it is. It's use our app, and you literally go to www.seafoodwatch.org/ocean-issues/wild-seafood, which is a heck of a lot. Just go to Monterey Bay Aquarium, Seafood Watch. And it says, use our app. It's for Android. It's for iPhone. And it gives you their up-to-date recommendations for ocean-friendly seafood and sushi. And remember, this is also about your health as well. What's safer for your health, be it farmed, be it ocean caught? There's mercury. Now there's, you know, all the fish in Japan have radiation. It's a whole situation.
Well, yeah, aren't some places adding, like, pinkness to the salmon to make it look pinker?
Oh, heck, like, yeah. Yes.
How
bizarre
is that?
Yeah, no, it's a huge deal. So, like, salmon, you want ocean caught. Shrimp, you want farmed. And so, again, not to bore the snot out of you with these details, but there is a lot you can... The issue's big, and there's a lot we can do. Of course, share the information with your loved ones. And the more involved we can get, the more we can kind of do the reach one, teach one thing. The better it's going to be. And the cool thing about this is that, yes, an ocean-caught salmon is going to cost you a lot more than farmed salmon. But that's a health matter, not necessarily an ocean matter. But a shrimp dinner that's farmed versus ocean-caught, this isn't going to be a cost issue. It's not going to cost you more to not use Miracle-Gro and things of that nature. So be mindful. And a great book if you want to learn more about this, Ted Danson's book, Oceans, is really a terrifying but incredible read.
Cool.
So I recommend it. Actually, we're not going to take a call today because Jake has a question. Get excited, Manus. Is this another love doctor, though, you big mess?
No.
Oh! What is it?
So yesterday, actually, I started to exercise again.
You go in and out of this. It's fascinating.
I do. And this is the reason why I go in and out of it. And here, I would like you to help me out with this.
Okay.
So I haven't really exercised. I mean, I'm an active person. I lead an active lifestyle. But I haven't, you know, lifted weights or done any push-ups and sit-ups for a couple months.
Okay.
So yesterday I said, I'm going to start doing it. So I do 101 push-ups and 101 sit-ups. And I was satisfied. I felt good. I was like, I'm starting off somewhere. Okay.
Okay.
Today, my chest is extremely sore.
Okay.
And my abs are really sore as well. And now I'm kind of discouraged. I don't want to go back and do the same thing again today. Also, if you're going to tell me to do a different exercise.
I am.
I only care. I'm going for the aesthetic muscles here. I'm not going for the whole package.
Okay. I get it. I appreciate that. The beach muscles. That makes sense. But honey, you still have legs. You're going to wear shorts at some point. You're going to be in the sack at another point. Like, and honestly, for balance, for the sake of balance, if you're just working out your chest and not your back, you're going to do some real damage to your posture. Because you make your chest really tight and your back gets really weak. You're pulling your shoulders forward. And that's going to throw off your whole posture, mess up your neck. Yeah, you got it. You got to do back. You just have to. You have to balance the body because even if you're thinking about aesthetic, you're going to destroy your posture. You're going to pull those shoulders forward. That's not going to look great anyway. And guys want big wings, a nice broad back.
Yeah.
Guys want that. They want good, thick legs. So I am going to tell you that. I'm going to tell you that the way you structure a workout can help with soreness. And this is why I'm a big fan of muscle splits. God, I remember no one wants to hear me go on about CrossFit, but I keep trying to understand what I am missing. I keep thinking I must be missing something. And I was watching, I think his name is Greg Glassman, right? I was like, I really want to understand this. I've got to be missing something. And he was talking about how in CrossFit, they have, I believe it's called randomized intensity, right? He's like, well, I do away with muscle splits, and that's so old school. And, you know, you need to be able to work every muscle on at any given moment. And I thought, well, that's what you're saying is absurd, because muscle splits are about recovery. And I think that this could very possibly be why there's a lot of rhabdomyolysis in CrossFit.
Who?
It's called Uncle Rhabdo. It's essentially when the muscle breaks down. We had a caller that got rhabdo
from
CrossFit. Since so many injuries. So when you're structuring your workouts into splits, it's just because you work your back on, let's say, Mondays and Thursdays, doesn't mean that if you needed to use your back and do a pull-up on a Friday, you couldn't. That concept is absurd. And the idea of a muscle split is recovery. You want to optimize your recovery, because if exercise is going to be the architect, recovery is going to be the builder. So working out is stress. You're injuring yourself quite literally, and hopefully not to an extreme degree where you get a strain or, you know, but you're creating little micro tears in that muscle when you train it. And so the recovery is when the body heals the muscle, it adapts, it becomes stronger and quite literally leaner and more fit and better able to perform the next workout. It's called a stress adaptation response. So what you would do, this is my favorite split, although there are different splits for different things. So I'm an expert in weight loss. So when I talk about fitness, I want you to think about fitness like, let's say, law or medicine. I believe there are subspecialties. You're not going to go to a family lawyer for criminal law. Well, I'm an expert in weight loss. If you came to me and said, hey, Jill, I need to put on 20 pounds, I'm versed in it. I'm like, all right, you know, here's the generalities of what we should do here. You know, I'm a heavier weight and these supplements, but somebody who specializes in putting weight on a body is very different than somebody who specializes in taking fat off of body. They just are. They're different animals completely. So for me, but nevertheless, the rule is going to remain the same. Train a muscle twice a week and allow 2 days of rest in between training, because optimal recovery is 48 hours. And all the prominent studies will show you 48 hours is an optimal recovery time. And in addition, training that muscle group intensely, mind you. So, for example, if you're doing a workout DVD, all right, you're hitting every muscle in the body and you're getting a good burn in 30 minutes. But you're not sitting there like going, raw chest, you know, it's different.
Right.
And if a person has limited time and they take a class, then you go, all right, you know, let's try to hit every muscle in the body and let's not overwork something. But if you have more time and you are going to the gym four times a week and you are really focused on building a body, especially as a guy, this is where I believe that splits are really, really important to optimize recovery. So in your particular instance, let's say you did push muscles twice a week, chest, shoulders, triceps, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you broke it down and said, I'm going to do obliques. And then the next day you did pull muscles like back and biceps and you said, I'm going to do upper and lower abs. And yeah, you the muscles do have, some of them will have the same origin and the same insertion. The bottom line is you can't always, if you're doing legs, you know, you're doing a squat, you're going to hit, you know, you're going to hit glutes, you're going to hit quads.
Right.
So you can't completely split the lower body up. But let's say you put legs on one day because you want to get bigger and then you did chest and back on another day. That might be a good split for you. So you do legs because you also want to get bigger. So you do legs on Monday, Thursday, and you do chest and back on Tuesday, Friday. And this way you get that recovery time. And that's honestly how you would want to do it.
Okay.
Recovery is key.
What if you can't recover, though? What if you're in a program where it's like a four-week program and you're in there every day doing this program?
What is an intelligent program would account for that? So, for example, when I create an actual program, like Body Revolution or the new one that's coming out, Body Shred, I split it on purpose.
So there's no way.
I have, like, my days are split on purpose, and they're only 30-minute workouts, so I'm like, ugh, even if there is overlap, like, you will be sore, but on Monday and Thursday, I'll have you doing your push muscles, and on Tuesday and Friday, I have you doing your pull muscles, your back, your biceps, you know, and I do get lower body, like, I try to split it, like, okay, I try to do quad-focused on Monday, Thursday, and then I try to do like glute and ham focused, and there is crossover with legs. Again, you do a lunge, and you're gonna hit multiple muscle groups in the lower body with a lunge or a squat, but you know where I will try to isolate those muscles or be quad focused is on Monday and Thursday, and I do it to optimize recovery.
Okay.
So a smart program is going to take that into account. That's why I don't do yoga more than twice a week even.
Because
it's very push-focused.
Mm-hmm.
It's very chest, shoulders, tries, chaturanga, up dog, down dog. Like, you know, but there's not a ton of biceps. There's not a ton of hamstrings in yoga. There's just not. A good teacher will find a way to help you activate those muscles, but there's not a ton of it. A lot of push. Chaturanga, plank, up dog, down dog, warrior, a lot of quads.
Yeah.
You know, warrior, a lot of quads. Crescent pose, a lot of quads. Chair pose, a lot of quads. No hamstring in there. You're not pulling your heel to your bum in any of those poses.
Yeah.
You know, so it's just with something like that, like I'll do yoga twice a week and I'll split it up by a couple of days. Like, again, if I did CrossFit, I would do it twice a week and I would split it up.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I would do it. That's when I look at it, I look at it like that. I take it and I would work it into a more holistic program where I go, okay, you know, because again, here's another problem. If you get into like a lot of these different exercise modalities that are hot, and again, I love yoga. So I could compare a lot of things, as crazy as this sounds, in yoga to CrossFit, where I think there's a lot of repetitive exercises. Like in yoga, when I look at CrossFit, I see like 30 different exercises. I see a lot of the same stuff that they do. And I mean, I'm like, you're doing the same thing over and over and over for time. So even still, like, split it up. Like yoga, it's a lot of the same, you know, asanas, sun salutations, it's a lot of the same exercises.
Yeah, and they make you breathe all
not
the time.
Not to time, but it's the same kind of thing. Like, if you're going to do those, I personally would say twice a week and split it up. And then engage in other... So, like, I would even take different... If that's how you're going to train, I would even take something like yoga that's very stability, flexibility, strength and blend it with something like CrossFit that's very like power, speed, obviously, where you're mixing the modalities of fitness. That's how I would utilize those types of workouts. I would blend them in with absolute opposite types of workouts and separate the workouts so the body has a chance to recover and get more variety in the workout regimen. Jeez.
Very good.
There you go.
All right.
Well, what I got out of that was I can't half-ass it. Got a whole ass it.
Whole ass it. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so go do your back today.
Maybe I will.
All right. Then.
All right. Thank you.
Anytime.
If you like listening to comedy, try watching it on the internet. The folks behind the Sideshow Network have launched a new YouTube channel called Wait For It. It's got interviews with comedians like Reggie Watts, Todd Glass, Liza Schlesinger, I've been friends with her for 10 years, one of the funniest people out there, and I still have a hard time with the last name, Liza. Our very own Owen Benjamin, that's me, takes you on a musical journey down internet rabbit holes and much more. You don't have to wait any longer. Just go to youtube.com/waitforitcomedy. There's no need to wait for it anymore because it's here and it's funny. And I love you.